tonight we have the privilege. Jen and I are going to kind of tag team preach tonight, if that's cool. So it's a privilege to be able to preach together with my wife. Tonight we want to share just a little bit of our stories. Some of you may be familiar with our stories. Some of you maybe not as much. But we want to share a little bit of just our heart. Obviously, our heart is for these students. Our heart is for these teenagers. This is why we're here. And you may or may not have ever been back with us on a Wednesday night in the Family Life Center for a youth service. That's beside the point. I hope if you know us, you know our heart is these teenagers and seeing God do incredible things in their lives. But tonight, we want to share a little bit more about our stories and really the why behind who we are and really the importance of the why for all of us. The title of our little tag team sermon tonight is The Why Behind the What. The Why Behind the What. And I want to share the importance of the why for every single one of our stories, everyone in this room. We all have stories. They're all powerful. A few weeks ago, I don't remember how long it was ago, all the weeks kind of blend together, but Pastor Dave did a Sunday night and just opened it up for people to share some testimonies and share some stories, and it's a powerful, powerful thing. When you share your story, I want to encourage you whenever you have the opportunity to do that, to go for it, because we all have a why that has brought us here tonight. I mean, here for this service, yes, but also to this point in life. We have a story, we have a why that has brought us here, and the why is key. Many times in church, we just focus on the what. We focus on the things, and what I mean by the what is that's the things we do. You know, as a church, whether it's services or events or outreaches or whatever, we focus on the what. We get all wrapped up in the what, and there's nothing wrong with that. The what is great. You're here tonight doing some what, right? But we cannot overstate the importance of the why that is behind the what. The principle I want to share tonight is simply this, to simply state all of what I just said, is that a what without a why is nothing but a routine. I'll say that again, a what without a why is nothing but a routine, but a what driven by a why is a mission. It's powerful, it's intentional, and it's unstoppable. So tonight, we're just going to share a little bit of our story and the kind of the what or the why behind the what for us. And I'm going to stop rambling and get out of the way, and I'm going to let Jer share for a little bit. Jen, share a little of her story.
And we're going to be discussing that after service tonight, getting my name wrong. It's kind of a big deal. But I am so blessed to be able to get to minister alongside with John. We come from very different backgrounds, very different stories, and yet God had a way of working both of our stories along to where we found each other and now get to be here, and we consider ourselves so blessed. And so a little bit of my story, a little bit about my why behind the what is I didn't always grow up in church. I remember always believing in God. I always believed he existed, but I never knew that there could be more. Never knew that there could be a relationship with God. I never knew that it could be more than just that surface level. I believe in God. I'm a good person. I'm going to heaven was kind of my thought process, kind of how I grew up. The best way I can explain that is I always knew we celebrated Christmas as the birth of Christ. Thought we celebrated Easter because of the death of Christ, and I just thought we were supposed to be sad, but then I was confused because of the Easter bunny and eggs and happiness, and so I just didn't have that understanding of the hope. I didn't have the understanding of the resurrection. If you would have asked me about any of that with the meaning of Easter, I would have had no clue. And so I always had this belief that God existed, but it never went beyond that. I remember when we were young, going to church on and off, but I never remember it ever being anything that was in the home. I don't remember much praying. I don't remember much reading the Bible. I don't remember it being a foundation point at all. And so I do know that I had, you know, somewhat of this belief, but not a real understanding. And so when I was in about first grade was when we had stopped going to church altogether. So from that time up through junior high, the first part of high school, I was like most people who are what you would think of unchurched, most people who don't have an understanding or a relationship with Christ. I found my worth in other things, whether it was boyfriends and dating. Look at the youth, because we just talked about some of that this past Wednesday. I was always about status and always about popularity, and I didn't care if I had to be mean or gossip or hurt someone in the process of making myself what I thought was the best person possible. And so when John had mentioned a couple of weeks ago when we had a testimony night here, and I don't see Judy, is Judy not here tonight, but I loved what Judy said when she stood up and she said, "You wouldn't believe the person I was is the person who's standing up here." And that's, I resonate so much with that, because I could stand here and tell you stories from my past, and hopefully you wouldn't think that I would be capable of such terrible things. But the person up here, you know, even though I'm not that person anymore, I am that person. But God has changed me, and God has molded me, and God has completely restored me from the inside out. And so I was someone who, in junior high and high school, I don't necessarily want to share on all those wonderful things from my past, other than to tell you that I didn't have a relationship with God and I didn't know that I could. And so what finally led me to church was, some of you met my brother when he was here. He's my younger brother, and he has an amazing story as well. I wish he was here to tell his portion of it, because I feel like I'm like the second half. I'm like the part two of that sequel. We were a movie. And so he started going to church. He got saved in a youth group, and then he started inviting me. And as the cooler older sister, I said, "No way am I going to church with you. It's not happening. You've got to be kidding me." But he, as the younger brother, how many younger siblings are out here? Pestered and annoyed and prodded and kept inviting me until I finally said, "Okay, I will go. If I go once, will you leave me alone? Will you stop bothering me about it?" And so he said, "Yeah, just come this once." And so I went that one time. It wasn't an earth-shattering service. It was actually, the youth group had had a friends night, so there wasn't even like a salvation message or anything. It was basically like, bring your friends, help them make connections to other people, and then invite them to come back. And so I went that one Wednesday. They were having an event Friday, and so there was a person there that I actually went to preschool with that I hadn't seen in so many years, and he said, "Hey, like, you should come back to this Friday event." So I came back, and long story short, within a couple of months, I had given my heart to God, and so it was for me amazing to make that connection from there's more to just believing in God, but there's a relationship. There's a different aspect to all of it. And so up until that time, as I sat and as John and I were talking about what we were going to be talking about tonight, the best way I can put it was, when I thought that believing in God was enough, I never understood the why behind the what of Jesus's life. I never understood the why and the purposes behind everything that's in the Bible. And so it's amazing, once I got saved, once I started attending youth group, attending church, and once I put the old life behind, the more I read the Bible, it was amazing to me that Noah's Ark wasn't just this guy building a boat, but there was a purpose behind it. The life of Jesus in Easter wasn't just, we're sad because Jesus died, but no, we're excited and we're happy and we're celebrating because of the resurrection and the ascension and what that means for us one day. And so my encouragement tonight is to start looking at things in the Bible, things that are here, the why behind the what of Jesus's life. It was such an impact to me. Another verse, or a verse that has meant a lot to me over the years, is James 2:19, which is not one that, you know, you memorize because it gives you strength throughout the day, but it says, "You believe that there is one God, good. Even the demons believe that and shudder." And so that always was just that reminder to me that even the demons believe. And so that was always that encouragement that it goes beyond belief, but there's a relationship there. There's more that God calls us and wants us to do. And so as I went to church, went to youth group, during that time, about 4 months after I gave my heart to God, my parents went through a divorce. lots of messy stuff. I can't imagine going through that without God. And so during that time, I didn't want to be at home, so I went to church. I spent all of my time in the church, growing up, getting closer to God, and eventually decided I wanted to go into ministry. Went to Central Bible College, where John and I met. And the cool thing is I always knew I wanted to do ministry, and I never thought that that would be with someone else. I don't know, for some reason, I always had this headstrong, like, well, if I'm going to do ministry, I can't marry someone who's going to be a minister, because how are we both going to do that? Like, he's not going to take the spotlight from what I want to do, but it's awesome that that God brought us together and that we get to do ministry together. And so I love the students that we have here. I love that being someone who came up through a youth group, and I didn't grow up the whole time in youth group. I only got to have like 2 years in a youth group, but those 2 years were definitely the most impacting years of my life. And so I love getting to pour into students. I love getting to make these years that they are in youth group the most impactful, so that they can go on when they go to college and keep that relationship with God strong. And so that's a little bit of the why behind the what of why I love being in ministry, why I love pouring into your students, whether they're your students by birth. I know some of you are parents, but if you're not, if you've been in this church long enough, these are your students. This is your family. And so I am honored to get to pour into them. I'm honored to have the privilege to minister to them, and I'm honored to do it with John. So here's a little of his why behind his what. I keep having to look so I don't say the what behind the why, because that would be embarrassing.
All right. I don't know why I planned on even talking at all. I mean, we'll just wrap it up right there. That was pretty good. Yeah. So, Jen, like Jen said, we have pretty different backgrounds. The why behind the what for Jen is, you know, she was saved in a youth group towards the latter part of her high school career, and so she loves pouring into students. I was kind of on the opposite side of that spectrum. I'm not quite saved yet. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to go there. Just kidding. I love Jesus. Just kind of woohoo. Get a little bit of laughter out there. Now, the opposite side of the spectrum that I come from, I was raised in the church from the time I was born. My parents have been AG pastors, and I feel like I learned to count by, like, flipping through the hymnal when people, we used to do those, just call out the number, you know, services, and we would sing that hymn, and I'd feel like that's how I learned, like, numbers in the alphabet, was like flipping through the the praise his name hymnal, you know, or whatever the name of that thing is. But for the most part, even though I grew up in church, I had my background, my foundation in church. For the most part, through my early life, I feel like in a big way I took it for granted. You guys know how we tend to do that in the church. And it's kind of a sad reality, but sometimes the longer we're saved, the less just miraculousness it has for us. You know, we lose just that incredible excitement and incredible, we lose what a privilege it is, what an incredible blessing it is to be saved. My goodness. Much less, you know, all the other blessings that Christ brings, but just the miracle of salvation. You know, we're all familiar with that phrase, familiarity breeds contempt. And not that there's contempt there, but growing up in the church, I didn't have an understanding of how incredible it was to be saved and to be in Christ. And so I did a pretty good job of learning to go through the motions. I led a pretty convincing double life through my teenage years. I was one way within the church. I was one way with my parents, and I was a very different way with my friends and the people that were kind of outside of that sphere. I had sins in my life that I kept secret as much as I possibly could, and I would never have verbalized it if you asked me, but church for me was expectations. It was routine. And it was just another part of life that I did, you know, because my family did it. So for me, that all changed my senior year of high school. It's kind of a weird story. We had come back from the mission field in Mongolia. My parents were itinerating, raising support to go back for another term. They were traveling all over the place. I had 1 year left of high school to do, and I was homeschooled because of our travel. And so Anchorage First Assembly was the church we based ourselves out of in Anchorage, Alaska. And for that whole year, while my parents traveled, I lived in the church basement. They had this little mini apartment, and they said, you can just kind of chill here while your parents are out traveling around and doing their thing. And so I lived in the church for a year in the basement. And every opportunity I could, I don't know if it's because I was bored out of my mind or because, you know, there was just exciting things going on, but every opportunity I could, I was with the youth group. I was at every event. I was at every service. And it got to the point where I just wanted to be a part. I wanted to help out. So I started interning with the youth pastor at the time that was there. And it was during that year, for the first time ever, I began to own my faith. My parents weren't there. It wasn't that I was going to church with my parents and I was just doing what they did. I wanted to be there, and I wanted to know Christ for myself. I wanted to experience him for myself, and it wasn't just routine and expectations anymore. It was mine. There was a why behind the what of church. It wasn't just the services and the different things that we step through on a weekly basis. It was the what. The what was still there. This is the services, the events, all that stuff was still there, but I understood it as this is a love for God and a love for his people that drives this. This is me. I'm here in church not because I have to be, but I'm pursuing God. I'm seeking his face. I want to know him more. That's what it became. And I am who I am, and I do what I do today because there's something in me that isn't satisfied with Christianity as a routine. I'm not satisfied with that. I'm not okay with that. My heart is for students, for the teenagers of this church, to see God do for them what he did for me. I want to see them stand up on the inside and not just claim Christ, but live for him on a day-to-day basis, to truly own their faith, to drop the masks and the double living, and be authentic, be real with God, be real with each other. And that is the why that drives me. I have that same prayer for everyone in this church. It's not just the students. How many of us truly own our faith and our relationship with Christ and truly understand the why behind what we're doing here in this room right now? And looking at the why in reference to our church and to our lives in the church, I've already mentioned the what's. I've talked about the what's, right? The things we do, ministries we have, classes we attend, events we put together, services we do. Unless we are fully convinced of and passionate about the why, it's so easy for all of that to become routine. It is so easy for all of that to become routine. This past Wednesday night, actually, was over in the FLC. I had a conversation with Mark Cox, and we're just talking about the church, about the youth group. And I said, you know what, for the past, I don't know how long, you know, my prayer has been, I don't want to come back here on a Wednesday night and just do another weekly service. I don't want to do it. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not okay with that. I'm not satisfied with just putting on a weekly service and having it marked on the calendar. The why is seeing souls saved and lives changed. If we're not seeing people set free and people come to know Christ, what are we doing? What are we doing? And so the why has to define us. It has to be our why, not as a church, but as people, as individuals. I just talked about me owning my faith. As believers, we have to own the mission that God has given us personally. We are all part of this church. We're part of this church family. As a church, we can come up with a lot of cute slogans, and we can you know, we can put them up on a church sign or do whatever else. But unless we as individuals, unless we as people personally embrace the mission, the why behind what we do, then in the end, it's going to come to nothing. This morning, Pastor Dave mentioned, you know, this remodel that we're doing. And in the business meeting where we were initially talking about it, he said something that is so key. Just that, you know, we can do a lot of different things, but unless there's vision and mission and purpose behind it, people might come and check it out one time, but they're never going to stay. Because it's just, you know, like I said, unless there's a mindset that's here in the church, unless we as a church grasp the mission and the vision of Christ, we're going to miss it. Jesus had a why that drove the what of his actions. I'm going to buzz through this really quick because Jen took way too much time with her segment of this message. I'm just kidding. We'll be discussing that line later tonight as well. In Luke 5 and in Luke 19, this is the story of Jesus with Levi or Matthew and the story of Jesus with Zacchaeus. In both instances, we see Christ having a meal and a fellowship with sinners. And both times, the religious leaders look at him and they say, what is this guy doing? What is he thinking? Having fellowship with tax collectors and sinners. In Matthew 5, Jesus says, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. And in Luke 19, he says, the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. You can almost hear him saying, what are you doing? Not in here with me. Christ's mindset, his the why behind the what of everything he did, like Jen mentioned, was to seek and to save the lost. This is he's saying, this is why I'm here. I don't know if you're not getting it or what, but hello, I'm here for the sick. I came to find the people who need me, to seek them out and to bring them to salvation. That's the why that drove Christ. And the question we have to ask ourselves tonight is, what is the why that drives us, and do we have one? Do we have one? Do we have a why that puts us in the pew? Do we have a why that brings us to the services and that brings us to the events and causes us to reach out to people and causes us to embrace one another in community? Do we have a why? Do we come to church for our comfort or our entertainment? Do we come because it's routine? Or do we come to know God more and to make him known? We need to evaluate our mindset. We need to evaluate the why behind the what of everything we do as a church family. I'm going to share one last quick story. This morning in Sunday school with the teenagers, we talked about the story from Scripture about the woman with the issue of blood who pushed through the crowd and touched the hem of Jesus' garment. Most of us are familiar with that story. What I never really thought of when it came to that story was, yeah, she touched Jesus' garment, but so did a lot of other people. In fact, he mentioned it when he said, who touched me? And they said, Jesus, I don't know what's wrong with you, but tons of people are touching you, and we can't really tell who you're looking for because everyone's touching you. This crowd is kind of, you know, swarming around, and people are all over the place, and there's tons of people touched Jesus, but one woman was healed. One woman's life was radically transformed. One woman was never the same again after that day. What's the difference? A bunch of other people touched Jesus too. Jesus said, there was one, that woman that touched me, and I felt power leave me. There was something that happened there. And if you ask me, there was a why behind the what for this woman. Something that caused her to push through the crowd to get to Jesus. There was intentionality and there was mission and there was something there that she was desperate for. And when her desperation met God's power, there was a transaction that happened there. And Jesus felt it. And he said, who touched me? Question that we have to arrive to tonight is, what is the why behind our what? Are we just casually bumping into Jesus? Or are we seeking to touch him? to receive from him, to be changed. When we're here in a service, are we seeking to walk out and never be the same again, or just to be one of the crowd? As we close tonight, I'm going to go ahead and have the youth team, the worship team, come back. Go ahead and come back up. I want us to take just a few moments, if we could, tonight, guys. I want to take a few moments to seek God and to listen to what he has to say to us. We're just going to take a few moments. We're going to pray together. We're going to worship together. And I want us to take just a few moments and allow God to birth in our hearts some fresh vision. I want to take some time and allow God to renew our focus on the why of what we do, why we do what we do. Sometimes there's hardship in the what, right? It can be a lot of different things. Maybe you're just tired. Maybe it's just routine or expectation. Maybe you've been hurt by something or someone. Maybe there's relationship issues. There's always hardship in the what. But that fades tremendously into the background if we are convinced and passionate about the why. I don't always like to get up in the morning early. I'm not a morning person. I don't know about you, but I just don't enjoy the morning. I don't always enjoy getting up and heading to the rec center. That, to me, that's a hardship. And there's no way I would do it if it was just the cool thing to do. But there's an understanding in my mind of there's a why, there's a reason, there's a purpose behind the need to do that, and so I do it. I ignore the hardship because there's an understanding of the why. I think of this woman and this woman with the issue of blood we just talked about. I'm sure it wasn't easy for her, especially in her state, to push through the crowd of people swarming around Jesus to touch the hem of his garment. It could not have been easy in the what. But she had an understanding of the why, and so she pushed through it. As a church family, we're going to encounter some hardships in the what. But if we can together grasp and get a hold of in our hearts the why, all of that's going to fade tremendously into the background as we focus on the priorities. So I'd like to spend just a few moments tonight in worship and in prayer, just allowing God to speak to our hearts and give us his mindset. I think Paul said it best when he said, "I must decrease so that he can increase." I pray that the mind of Christ, the mindset of Christ, would overtake whatever why we might be operating in right now. So if you guys would, whether you want to remain seated, whether you want to stand and sing with us, whether you want to come up to these altars, they're open. We're just going to sing this one last song together as we close, but let's find a way to respond to God's word tonight.